Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to It Factor Entertainment Podcast. Your host, Wayne Benitez. How's it going, ladies and gentlemen? We have a special guest. Yes, she's an 80s icon, R&B. Give it up for Stacy Ladislaw Jackson.
Hi, man. And family, I've been married for, this January will be 29 years. Just became a grandma. Can you believe that? Just became a grandma a year ago. And I'm currently in ministry. I've actually been in ministry for 10 years now, a little over 10 years. I wrote a book. And I did some studio work and pushed the pause button on that. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on. And then I own and operate two businesses here in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. Mm-hmm. I also teach voice lessons, and I mentor children ages 9 through 18. So, yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yes. That's definitely amazing. That's a... Yeah, you're definitely busy.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. And what was it like being a child star?
Actually, it was quite interesting. It was actually a challenge. It was exciting. At the same time, it was difficult. There were fun times, there were good times, bad times. And because I had to come out of school, actually, when my first album was recorded, I was 12 and a half. And so I was, of course, in the, sixth, seventh grade, and I had a rough time with the kids starting to bully me and being picked on, and so I had to end up being homeschooled and finishing my schooling at home. So, yeah, those were, like I said, those were interesting times for me, because with success, many times comes you know, it brings along other things too. You know, sometimes people become jealous of you, and it's just a lot, you know. But it was a good decision that my parents had me homeschooled, because, like I said, I don't even know how I would have turned out if I had stayed in school, being treated that way, you know. So that's why I'm so passionate about what I do. I mean, I work with children ages 9 through 18, and I do speak with the children about bullying, because, you know, a lot of kids are bullied, but they're afraid to tell. And I was one of those kids. I was afraid to tell, because one of the girls that used to pick on me in school, she used to say things like, well, if you tell, then I'm going to beat you up at 3 o'clock, and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, those were interesting times, but thank God that he carried me through that. And when I turned 14, I got a phone call. Well, actually, my management called me. They received a phone call from Michael Jackson's management company requesting me to open for the Jacksons in 1981. And I said no, because I didn't realize the opportunity, of course. And, you know, at 14, I just wanted to stay at home with my friends and, you know, do regular things that, you know, you did as a child, you know, the outdoors playing and, you know, that type of thing. But my childhood was not normal. So I could definitely relate to Michael Jackson. So, you know, of course, I wasn't that super superstar that he was, but I did have the platform, and I had the, you know, that dealing with that that type of success, it's a price that you have to pay that comes along with that, you know. And I think that's the side that sometimes people don't really, you know, understand or really, you know, get that part, you know, because I really went through a whole lot. I dealt with depression, and I think I dealt with low self-esteem as well. And because you would think that, you know, when you have reached a certain level of success and you've attained, you know, pretty much whatever you wanted, you know, sometimes people become prideful, they become arrogant, but success never changed me. I remained the same person. And I think it came from me having the foundation that I had, meaning my family, my parents, my mother traveled with me everywhere I went. And she definitely played a significant role in my life in keeping me grounded. And that meant so much, you know, because that was another thing that she was very careful and cautious of me, you know, at the tender age of 14. There were, you know, adults always around. And I remember one time in particular when I'd gone to, was it Trinidad or Jamaica, one of those islands. We had gone over there. I did a show there. And as soon as we got off of the plane, we were, you know, walking out the airport, and we were confronted with drug dealers, and they were asking us what kind of drugs we wanted, and, you know, it was right there in our faces, you know. But, like I said, having that foundation, my mother traveled with me every place I went to, you know, having that support system, I never went in that direction, and I thank God so much that I did not ever, you know, choose that lifestyle, because it was always there. You know, drugs were always around me, you know, the partying, the nightclubs. And I used to get invited when I became of age around 20, 21, you know, to go to the after parties and things like that. But I just never indulged. And I think also having the faith background, I was raised in the Catholic Church, that also played a significant role in my life, because I never, like I said, to me, that just drugs and alcohol was not an option for me. So, yep.
No.
Yes, it's just tough to be in the industry. Basically, so many stories of people, trying to make it out of temptations trying to stay walk that fine line.
So true, because that, you know, the industry itself is stressful, you know, and it's an industry where it's full of competition. It's full of, you know, the latest and the greatest. And as the saying goes, you're only as good as your last album. You know, there have been many artists that have only recorded maybe two or three albums, and, you know, you sometimes don't hear from them anymore. And that's because the record label drops them, you know. And that's what happens in the music industry. You're only as good as your last album. And that means your album sells, you know, because it's the more your album sells, the more the record companies make and the more royalties you make as an artist. And then in return, the more shows you perform, you know. But, the industry is cutthroat. And you really have to have thick skin to be in the R&B industry. And I did not have thick skin. I think later on I developed thick skin because I was always a very quiet, sensitive person. And my feelings would get hurt easily. But as time went on, you know, I was able to handle that and I guess kind of, you know, deal with that type of thing, with the jealousy, the envy. I had so many girls that used to always pick with me, you know, and that was pretty much everywhere I went. You know, the jealousy thing was always there. And I just had to realize that, you know, it was nothing I could do about it. You can't change people. All you can do is try to better yourself, you know. But, yeah, I dealt with depression. And it's funny because, you know, the music industry is another part of the industry that a lot of people don't talk about, you know. And I recently heard of a story about Tamar Braxton, I think it was. And I don't know how true it is, but I was told through, I think I saw it through one of my music industry associates was telling me that she had tried to kill herself with overdosing or something like that. You know, you have that type of pressure on you all the time, you know, and it's like wherever you go, people are watching you. You have to be careful what you say, what you do. You know, you're in that limelight, you know. And I think you, like I said, if you don't have that firm foundation, it's so very easy to get caught up in the drugs. It's so very easy to get caught up in the alcohol, you know, the substance abuse. And I'm not talking about her, but I'm just saying in general, you know, it's a very stressful industry, you know.
Yes.
It's a lot that's demanded of you. You know, I remember when I did a Jackson's tour in 1981, we went to 36 different cities, and we were away for 13 weeks. And there were nights where I cried because I wanted to go home. I wanted to be with my friends, my family. My sister just had a baby. So it was a big sacrifice, you know, on my part at 14 years old. But when I think back on it now, who wouldn't want that platform to open for the Jacksons? You know, we were like in like 20, 30,000 seat arenas, you know, and sold out shows everywhere, you know, and to be able to meet Michael and to watch him perform every night, you know, and to go backstage and to talk to him. And it was just a wonderful experience, you know. And I'll never forget one day, I just turned 16, and he called my house. And I was so surprised because my mother had told me that my son. My mom had told me that I had a phone call. So I went over to the phone, and she had already knew it was Michael. So, yeah, he says, hi, Stacy. Like, hello, who is this? This is Michael. So I was like, Michael who? This is Michael Jackson. He's calling to wish you a happy birthday. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I took the phone, and I put the phone down, and I screamed because I could not believe that it was Michael Jackson calling to wish me a happy birthday at 16. That was absolutely incredible, and it's a time and moment that I will never forget because it was just so wonderful, so thoughtful of him to call and to wish me a happy birthday, you know. And it's amazing because, you know, I've heard many, many people say things about Michael that weren't true. I've heard many people, you know, it's unfortunate because when you reach a certain level of success in life, you know, it's going to be a lot of people coming at you, you know, trying to, you know, be your friend for the wrong reason, trying to figure out what they can gain, what can they get from you know, being around you, being in your circle, I'll say, you know. So he had a lot of weight that he was carrying on his shoulders, and he was very unhappy. You know, he was a very unhappy person. But at the same time, he was one of the most nicest people that I'd ever met during my R&B career. And I met lots of celebrities, and I'm not, you know, speaking any ill against anyone, but I'm saying that there are people that sometimes when they reach a certain level of success, they become, you know, they have these egos and they look down on other people, and you know, it's just not a good thing.
Yeah, they forgot their humble beginnings.
Exactly. Not Michael. Michael was never that way. Michael never harmed children. Michael was a child. A star. Michael did not have a normal childhood like myself. I was never home. I was always on the road, you know. So when I hear those type of stories, it's so unfortunate because people sometimes tend to believe the negative instead of the positive things. You know, they kind of take and run with the bad stuff that they hear, and many, many times it's not even true.
Yes, he was definitely been bullied from the conglomerate medias, and
that's right.
And it was a lot of pressure on him, basically,
especially some of these
untrue stories of Michael's, even when VH1 did the last one on him with Flex Alexander, that was all of that was completely false right there, and he was another that person and stuff.
Right, the monster that they, you know, made him out to be. No, he was not. Michael was very generous. Mike was very kind, and he was just a sweet soul, a humble soul, humble spirit. And it's just unfortunate, like I said, that, you know, people, it's just bad that people sometimes treat you like that, you know. When you reach that level of success, it's like you're just almost like a target in some cases, you know.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he was unique. He really was. And in my opinion, Michael Jackson was the greatest entertainer in my time, in our time. And I don't think that there would ever be another Michael Jackson.
Well, he's basically the GOAT, basically, of the industry, basically.
Excuse me? I'm sorry.
He was basically the greatest of all time, and
that's right.
Nothing can come close.
That's right. Yes, indeed he was. I mean, Michael had the full package. You know, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, other singers and dancers. I'm not naming any names, but there will only be one Michael Jackson. You know, there are a lot of celebrities that come along, and, you know, they kind of take little bits and pieces from this artist, that artist, and, you know, kind of form their image behind these other people, you know, that they've listened to or admire. And I'm not knocking that, but like I said before, there will never be another Michael Jackson. He was a kind soul, and he will never be forgotten. I tell you, I'll never forget the day when I saw it on the news, and my phone started ringing off the hook, and I just thought it was like, you know, a hoax, or I just did not believe that it actually happened. You know?
Right. I thought it was basically like misleading information from the media, and it was just so hard. I didn't even want to believe it for almost the whole day.
Yeah, it was absolutely terrible. And because of the upcoming tour that he was about to, you know, he was about to travel, and just a big, big comeback for him. I had lost contact with Michael throughout the years. I wish that, you know, we had stayed connected during those times, because I knew I knew where he was as far as the depression, because I was there myself. To attain success, that platform, to be able to buy whatever you want to buy, you know, to travel the world, to do whatever you want to do, but still unhappy, you know. I always say, this is something that I make sure that I say whenever I get an opportunity to speak, whether it's at church or a radio interview, TV, whatever. You know, money can't buy happiness, and money can't buy peace. You know, there are a lot of things that money can't even buy, period. You know, money can't buy a wonderful relationship, you know. So it just goes to show, you know, I've met many celebrities that have lots of money, but they're not happy. On the inside, they have a void. And I truly believe that that's where I was, and I think that that's where Michael was too. And I truly believe also that God created a hole in us, in a void, that only he could fill. Only he could fill that void. And I know that's what happened with me. During that time, I was depressed for years, off and on, and I would walk around with a smile on my face. But on the inside, I was very, very unhappy. And it had gotten so bad that I literally did not want to open the curtains, the shades. I would just keep them down because I didn't want the sun to shine through. You know, and depression is real. And it's a terrible place to be in, you know. And I remember back then, I had gotten to the point where I began to pray more. And I said, God, I said, there's got to be something else. There's got to be something greater than this stardom, something greater than this money and fame, this platform, because I'm not happy, you know? And so one night I turned everything off. It was completely dark in the room. And I prayed like I never prayed before. And I said, God, I need you. I need your help because I'm tired of being unhappy. I'm tired of being depressed. I was tired of being in that dark place, you know, and I'll never forget. It was as if I felt a presence come over me that I had never felt before in my life. And at that moment, I really believe that I had an encounter with the Lord, and my life had changed from that night on. From that night on, my whole life changed. And that's when, a few years later, I became a minister, and God used and is still using my platform today to talk and to share my experience in the music industry and the things that I went through and, you know, my ups and downs and especially the depression. You know, it's a terrible thing. And without God, some people don't have hope. You know, I never forget that day I turned the news on and I heard that, what is his name, Robin Williams? He was one of my favorite actors. I heard that he had killed himself.
Right.
And they said the same thing. They said the same thing. He had been depressed for many years, and he killed himself. I was like, oh, my gosh. You know, so, like I said before, I have a passion to help people, to share my story, because I truly believe that if God did it for me, then he could do it for anyone else. He's no respecter of persons. So my life changed that night, and I've never been seen. And I praise God every day that he kept me while I was in that dark place in the R&B industry. It's not what a lot of people think it is. It's not. There are so many people in that industry that are very, very unhappy. But they put on this fad, they put on this face, the happy face. But deep down on the inside, there's a void. There's a void. There's an emptiness.
Right. It's
there's
like so many tragedies also from
that's
that also.
That is so true. And then you start to hear about the abusive relationships, you know. I'm talking about celebrities, the abuse, you know, some of the male celebrities that beat their girlfriends or their wives. Where does that stem from? Where does it stem from? You know, it comes from a dark, angry, unhappy place. Because no one that's happy is going to abuse someone else. No? Oh, but yeah, that's the reality of it all. You know, I thank God that he snatched me out when he did, because it was a very interesting time for me, because during that time I told my management, I told my father, who was my co-manager at the time, and I also told my family and friends that I am walking away from the R&B industry, and I am serving the Lord. And some of them thought I was crazy, because they're like, you know what? How are you going to walk away from a number one song? Because at that time, Where Do We Go From Here was number one on the Billboard charts for Johnny Gill, whom I discovered, my mom and I. And, they thought I was crazy, because that was like, you know, who walks away from a number one song? Think about that. That was like the highlight of my career. You know, well, I mean, prior to Michael Jackson's story. Yeah, that was the number one song. So I walked away from it. I told the record label I was done, and I gave my life to the Lord. I became fully committed to serving Christ, and I never looked back. I had opportunities, you know, along the way. People would call me and ask me if I would come and perform. I remember one day I was at we have a recording studio here in Maryland, and I was at the studio one day, and I think, what is his name? He's a rapper. I think his name is Nas. Is that his name? Nas? Yeah. His people had called the studio, and he was going on tour, and they were wondering if I would come on and do some shows with him. And I think the song they wanted me to do was it Two-Way Street or Let Me Be Your Angel? It was one of those songs. And I'll never forget, I told my niece, I said, girl, you're not going to believe the Nas people called the studio and asked me if I would come on the road with them and do some do one of my songs. And she's like, what? They don't know? And you turned them down? I said, I sure did. I did not. I no longer had a desire to sing that music anymore. I no longer had a desire to be, you know, a part of that industry. Because I'm telling you, what they were requiring of me is not what I was willing to give. Now, when I say that, I'm being transparent with you. It's like you got to go to the after parties. You got to go to the, you know, what is it? You got to get high. You got to have sex with this person and that person, you know, to be in the clique. I'll never forget one of the people whom I helped in the industry said to me, Stacey, you know what? You're not in the clique. You need to go to more parties. You need to get out more. And I was like, and this was during the time, this was prior to me walking away from the industry. I was like, I'm not in the clique. What do you mean I'm not in the clique? But I realized later on, the click was those things I just mentioned, right? So I was like, you know what? If this what it takes, also one thing I left out, I had to start wearing more provocative clothes, okay? Which was not, that Stacey Lattisaw was not going to do that, okay? I was like, no, you guys can have this. This is not me. I am not going to walk on anyone's stage half-dressed, looking like a lady of the night. No. Not. So all those things put together is what caused me to walk away from the recording industry. And there were numerous people in the industry that did not like some of the things that, you know, I said some things I'm saying now, but it's all true. It's all true. You have to conform. And if you don't conform, guess what? You're not as successful if you don't conform.
Right.
Right? You get what I'm saying? So I chose to walk away. No. I'm not going to... No concert. I'm not wearing no skimpy little outfit. No. Because it was almost like it was no longer about singing. It was becoming more about image.
Yeah.
It was becoming more about, you know, how much more sexier you can look. You know, and I was always a singer. You know, and I still am. I'm a singer. You know, so I was like, you know, yeah, it's quite sad, to be honest with you, because when I watch, and I don't even care who hears this radio show, when I watch the a lot of the award shows. I don't understand, because if you're a singer, why do you have to dress half naked? Why? Why did not just, why can't you just sing and wear nice ladylike clothes? But that's where the industry is. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, especially with these young artists, and it seems like the producers and others want them to pressure them to wear these type of things and even use it in wear it in the music videos also.
Yes, indeed. So I was what you call, what is that term? I think it's called black sheep or black goat or something.
Yes.
The one that everybody talked about because I wouldn't conform. So there were a lot of people in the R&B industry that did not like Stacey Ladislaw because of what she stood for. And I don't care. I still don't care. Does it make me arrogant? No, that doesn't make me arrogant. That just says to me that was my stance on it. And I still, you know, I stand on everything that I just said. I was not going to conform to that. If that's what it took, I didn't want any parts of it.
Also, a listener wants to know, do you listen to R&B artists a day, and who would they be?
You know, it's interesting that you said that, because my husband and I, we like a lot of old school music. You know, when we were younger, we listened to OJs. Oh, my gosh. So many, what is it, Atlantic Star. I don't know if you're familiar with any of these groups, but, yeah. Who else did I met? Nicole. She was another beautiful person I met. Very humble, very down to earth. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful soul. Who else? Langstar, I already mentioned Langstar. OJ's. Who else? Of course, Whitney Houston. I love Whitney Houston. Yeah. But yeah, there. I mean, oh, of course, Celine Dion. I love her. Love her voice. Oh my gosh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful voice. But the music that I listen to today, is old school music. When my husband and I go out, we do date night on Friday. We put on old school music because music is not, R&B music has changed so much. And I'll never forget, I was listening to an interview, Soulchild was speaking, and he said that he was giving up R&B music and he was going to become a rapper. I was so disappointed because I was like one of his biggest fans. I love his voice. I was like, oh, no, are you kidding me? But you know why? Because the music had changed. The music had changed. It was like it was becoming more about the beat of the song, and it was like the voice really didn't even matter much anymore.
Right, with no substance.
That's what I was about to say, no substance. So that's why when you turn on the radio today, a lot of the music that people probably going to be talking to me more now, but it just doesn't have any much substance to it. It just doesn't. No? But that's amazing, because I used to also listen to Gerald LaVert. I loved his style. To me, he had an outstanding voice, a wonderful performer. Who else did I listen to, still listen to today on my iPhone? But, yeah, it was pretty much a lot of groups, you know. And like I said, my female artist, Whitney Houston. Male artist would be Lionel Richie. I love Lionel Richie. I love, gosh, who else I listen to? Oh, Babyface. Oh, yes, Lord. Love Babyface. His music to me is timeless. He's an outstanding writer, outstanding song producer and singer. Yeah, I'm a big Babyface fan.
Yep. Also, can you tell me about your new book, Not the Same Girl Anymore?
Yes, indeed. I wrote a book about 5, maybe 6 years ago now, and it's entitled I'm Not the Same Girl Renewed. And it basically talks about, you know, where I was back in the industry, how I started my career, and it brings people up to speed to where I am today. It talks about my ministry as well, which is Believers Building Bridges, and it's about relationships, it's about love, it talks about the do's and don'ts in the R&B industry, and I just share my advice, share my story. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Also, what was it like to perform with Johnny Gill?
Well, like I said before, you know, we went to school together. We went to school together here in D.C. So we used to have talent shows in our basement, and I didn't know that he could sing. So he sang a song. And I went upstairs, and I told my mom, I said, Mom, you have to hear Boogie. That's his nickname. I said, you have to hear Boogie sing. So she came downstairs, and she heard him sing. She was like, oh, my gosh, he has an outstanding voice. So what we did was, she called Atlantic Records. And at the time, Henry Allen was the president of the label. And Henry had him record, told him to sing, and put it on a cassette tape, and that's what he did. He sent it to Atlantic Records in New York, and so a few weeks later, we had Johnny Gill, whom I still call Boogie, had him come up to New York, and he signed him. So, yeah, so we went on to record a duet album, and we dated for a brief time, and he was like one of my first boyfriends. But yeah, that was an interesting time, and we were only 16 when we dated. You know, I mean, I don't think we knew much about love. No, I didn't. I know nothing about no love at 16 years old. I mean, who does? You know. But yeah, we did some concerts together, and we only did one duet album together. And then he went on and did a solo career, and then he went on to New Edition. So that's the story behind that. Yeah, people will often ask me, and they still do periodically, ask me what happened to you two. And I never share why I broke off the relationship. You know, it was just something that happened, and I chose to keep it between us, but I broke off the relationship. And I'm not sure if you saw the story, the New Edition biopic. Did you see that?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes, I've seen it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was very disappointing to me, because the way that they described it, it was as if, I don't know if you saw that part or not, but it was like, I think it was the second night where Ralph had asked him about him and I, what happened to us, and he kind of reached at his arm, and he was like implying the color of his skin. Yeah, her mom, you know, her mom didn't like me, or something like that he said. And that was so not true.
Right.
So not true. As everyone can clearly see, my husband is dark-skinned. My daughter-in-law is dark-skinned. I have I have dark-skinned people in my family. So, needless to say, I was called racist, and my mom was called racist. That was absolutely one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. And I was so upset that I think I cried about 3 nights because I could not believe that he had the audacity to call me, or my mom, I'll say, accuse her of being racist. He should be ashamed of himself because that was not true at all.
It's not true. Right, and it's like anything for they pressure them to add false information and like truth movies and
right. But he should have corrected that. He also should have called me and apologized to me because that was so not true and it's still not true. And like I said before, if it weren't for my mother and I, he would have never gotten the record label. He wouldn't have gotten discovered. So that was terrible because I had to block many people on social media because they began to call me racist. Why, you owe us an explanation. No, I don't owe anyone an explanation. Why don't you ask Johnny Gill why I broke up with him? If you want to know what happened, ask him.
If anything, for a big paycheck.
Yeah, it is what it is. But I always say, you know, I always go back to one of the terms that Michelle Obama used, when they go low, we go high. So, you know what I did? I chose to remain silent. Yeah, I chose to remain silent. Yes, indeed. It's all good. I forgive him, and I still pray for him every day. And I wish him all the best. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Are you doing any new music, working on?
Actually, you know, as I was saying when we first began to talk, I started on some new material, of course, gospel CD. And it really wasn't going in the right direction that I wanted it to go in, with the songwriters and producers, so I kind of pushed the pause button. So I plan on going back in the studio again. This will be my third time going back in the studio again and picking up from where I left off. By the way, my daughter sings, and she plays the piano as well. And our son, he's a songwriter and producer. He actually produced, was it 2 songs? The 3 songs on, oh gosh, what's his name? Raheem Devon, he's a recording artist. Yeah, in fact, they chose my son's song to be the single. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Awesome.
The music is definitely in their genes.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how it is with Guard. Basically, actually leads some of these celebrities into the church ministries. That left the music industry to do that. Like, for example, like Play from Kid and Play. He's a minister now.
Really, I did not know that.
Yes. I know the rap artist Mace, he's now a pastor, and you have even Reverend Run also.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And Eve, I think Tracy Edmonds also is part of that now, and even Montel Jordan also. He's
I think he's a minister.
Minister, yes.
God be the glory. That's good stuff. Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. Yeah, I saw that a while back. Praise be to God. Glory to God.
Yes. Would you like to plug anything for our listeners out there?
Well, I think we pretty much covered everything. I talked about the book, talked about some new music, talked about where I am today with the ministry. My book is available on Amazon. Once again, it is entitled I'm Not the Same Girl, Renewed. And my information on social media, of course, my website information is StacyLattisaw.net. And I'm on Twitter, Stacy Lattisaw. I just joined Instagram about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, something like that. I'm trying to be more active on there. We don't like social media, to be honest with you. I'm a private person. But, yeah, I'm on Instagram. I think my Instagram page is at, I'm sorry, is it the official? I think it's official, Stacy Lattisaw, yeah. And my Facebook page, my fan page, is the official Stacy Lattisaw page. So that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Yes, you can come back anytime to the show. It's an honor to have you on It Factor Entertainment Podcast. Stacy, you can come back anytime.
Nice talking to you as well. Thank you so much, and God bless you. And may God bless your new your radio show. Amen.
Thank you so much, and God bless you back also.
All right, and you have a great day.
Okay. Same to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.